It's Thursday, December 17th, 2015, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games, and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 128, A Long Time Ago on the Xbox. Runtime for this episode is 1 hour and 33 minutes.
Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, a podcast that I'm Jeremy.
I fly the Centennial Peregrine. I'm Tyler.
Not a freighter pilot. My name is Zach.
Let's get right to what we've been playing, because we have a big assignment this week.
PIM particles?
Yes, PIM particles.
Minovsky's particles?
Spread Minovsky particles to combat density, Tyler. That means what have you been playing?
That's actually a really good question. So I mentioned it briefly last week, but I got Assassin's Creed Black Flag, and it's great.
Welcome to a year ago. That's
I know.
Good.
You're catching up in time.
You know I always play games like a year or two late, right?
Yes.
I think that game was 2 years ago, actually. Yeah, because terrible Assassin's Creed nobody liked where you could fly through walls was last year.
We're three Assassin's Creeds away from that one.
So, I mean, it's fantastic. I love the broadside combat. I actually feel like the ship-to-ship combat is way harder than any of the rest of the game thus far.
Assassin's Creed combat system is just a really bad version of the Arkham one.
My problem mostly with it is that in any particular fight, you wait to counter, and then you just kill the guy.
Yep.
There is no reason to do anything else unless it's one of the optional objectives.
Yeah.
Because occasionally just shooting the guy is good, but...
Some of them can take more than one hit, because with the quick shoot...
You don't have four bullets yet, do you?
I have three.
Okay.
Well, you can use the gun to throw them off balance and then go on the offensive instead of just waiting for them to attack and counter. But attacking and counter typically ends up being your best option because you get into horde fights.
Yeah. Well, and although you can use the gun to finish people, which is fun, but not necessarily any more effective than just finishing them. My problem with it is that in Arkham, you can be interrupted if you go for the killing blow, which makes it a timing thing. Like, you have to say, do I have enough time here to execute the killing blow? In Assassin's Creed, the answer is always yes, and there's no reason to keep people alive.
They're polite.
Because there's not a combo meter or anything.
I think it's really the combo meter that makes Arkham shine. That's both a fun, hey, I want to see how far I can go mechanic, and it's fuel for your best moves.
Yeah, well,
they did a really good job when they ported that to Shadows of Mordor.
Oh, did they use basically the same mechanic as...
Oh, yeah.
It's made by the same company, right?
Yeah.
So they can totally just port that. So in Arkham, choosing to use the killing blow is a tactical decision. In Assassin's Creed, there was no reason not to. It's also your most effective move. Just always use it. You can also, I guess, break their defense and then hit them in the back. Is also pretty effective if you're not willing to wait for them to attack you. But that said, it's a lot of fun still. It's just not as good as Arkham.
Which would be fine if they haven't made like 10 games since Arkham Asylum came out. With Arkham Asylum sitting there as a model.
That's the assassinations are so fun. It's, I don't know. It's a great game, and I love pirates, so.
It's crazy
everyone
that they
likes
just
pirates.
Make it okay pirates now after that.
Wait, is it
there
not?
There has not been a pirate ship in an Assassin's Creed game since 4.
You mean the series in general.
Yes.
Honestly, I'm really excited if they ever go to space with it. That would be really cool.
Anything else?
So, we played a game called Tolpa.
I know I've heard of it, but I can't think of anything about it.
It's like a really weird metaphysical Limbo ripoff.
Huh.
I mean,
Limbo already pretty metaphysical?
No, not really. It's just really dark.
All right.
I take everything in Limbo at face value, even though you probably shouldn't. This game includes like a lot of Hindu and Buddhist imagery throughout the entire game, which is bizarre to see in, you know, a Western market. But it's okay. It goes for creepy. I don't think it quite achieves it. None of the puzzles are particularly interesting. Like, none of them are like, aha, I know how to solve that puzzle. That was satisfying to figure out. Most of them are like either an obvious solution or moon logic. Like, why was that the solution to the puzzle?
That's too bad.
It was okay. We mostly played it. I don't recommend it, but it's mostly interesting because there's a huge cipher at the end of the game.
So if you like puzzles.
Yeah. If you like cryptograms... That's the thing for you, is play Tolpa and solve that puzzle at the end.
It's not like there are thousands of websites that just give you hard puzzles every day you could use instead.
No, I mean, why would that be a thing? Also, what is this website you speak of? Is that a place where there are spiders?
Yes. Zach, what have you been playing? Kylo's lost his privileges.
Played League of Legends, playing a lot of ARAM lately. I actually got my second ever pentakill almost a year after I got the first one.
You
Go
know,
figure.
Pentakill a year keeps the something that rhymes with year that's bad at the deer.
I have no idea.
I lost my privileges too. Keep going, Zach.
Played Darius. It was not a pentadunk, but my team followed up. We did well. We won. That was fun. On top of that, played some Skullgirls.
Ooh, that's fun. Why'd you pick that up out of curiosity?
It was on sale for $2 a long time ago.
Okay. I think that's why I picked it up with intent to play it, and that just never happened. Yeah. It just really doesn't seem like your type of game.
Like, at all. It's like
it's not.
2D. Okay.
I guess you play DOA, so in that sense.
Except it's a 2D fighter, so.
It's not really up my alley. It's kind of fun. Not great.
It's got one of the better combo systems, one of the more intuitive for me combo systems in a 2D
really
fighter I've ever seen.
I really wish they would have an Evo one here, but.
Fun fact, the team who made Skullgirls is making a 2D platformer. Looks really good.
That's interesting.
It's kind of Symphony of the Night style.
Since I got a Wii U over the break, I've been playing a lot of Smash 4.
Which I was, like, completely aghast about. I'm like, man, Zach got a Wii U.
I was surprised, but he's been, like, kind of threatening to for a while. His Wii's been dying, Xenoblade he wants to play, and...
Now they just need to release
cheap.
That Shinten Fire Emblem crossover that they announced, like, 4 years ago.
Yeah, that'll be cool. There's
man,
a handful of stuff I could loan
next
you, I'm not sure.
Next year is just gonna be ridiculous for me in terms of games. Overwatch, BattleTech, Fire Emblem.
Oh, yeah, new Fire Emblem's coming out next year.
Fire Emblem X and Y.
Yeah.
I got Civ Beyond Earth, which is actually a lot of fun. A lot different because it's a tech web instead of a tech tree.
Oh, that's actually kind of interesting.
Units upgrade differently because obviously you're not advancing through the ages because you've already flown and landed on a different planet. So that's kind of interesting.
Isn't like hippies, mega anti-hippies, and... hippie neutral.
They're labeled harmony, supremacy, and purity. Harmony is like we're harnessing and working with the planet to make ourselves better. Supremacy is we're using everything we've got to take over this planet, and then we're going to go back and kick the crap out of Earth. And purity is screw all of you guys. We're human. We're making this Earth.
Okay. It's been a while since I've looked at
so space racists.
Yeah. On Smash, I've been sticking primarily to like the Fire Emblem characters and Little Mac.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask, how much Smash have you actually played? Did you unlock everyone? Because it's going to be embarrassing if you've played more Smash than me.
I've unlocked Game & Watch. I think that was the last
guy
I unlocked.
So now
I know it was either him or Dark Pit. Which one comes afterwards?
I think I got Dark Pit last.
I don't remember the order. I have everyone but Duck Hunt.
Oh, no, that's Duck Hunt was last on the Wii U version for me.
I have been just playing, like, All-Star and Classic and stuff like that.
I believe everything unlocks in that game if you just play it enough. Or rather, all the characters.
Or if you do all the events, which is how I unlocked everything. I was kind of disappointed with Dark Pit because at least Mario and Dr. Mario play kind of differently. Like, Dr. Mario is slower but hits harder.
And he has the tornado.
Pit and Dark Pit are the same character except their side B is slightly different. Also, their neutral B is different. Pit's is way better.
Dark Pit is probably my least
favorite.
My most met character.
Yeah, I like it. I like the fact that the Master Ball and the normal Pokeball are different, but Master Balls seem to show up a lot more. Legendaries seem to crop up a lot.
Yeah, I feel like half the Pokemon available in this game are legendaries.
It's because they wanted to choose iconic Pokemon, and what are the iconic Pokemon?
Pikachu. Meryl, who is not in this game.
Goldeen.
Piplup.
Why did they use Goldeen and not Magikarp for the
Nobody knows!
It's been around since
because
the first Smash.
If they did Magikarp, he could occasionally evolve into Gyarados and be really cool.
That would be awesome.
Yes, and that would be too good for this world. Like, it would be like if they added Cloud. Is that it, Zach?
Yeah, I would... I thought there was one more game, but I'm drawing a blank right now. Oh, no, I remember what it was. I finished Hyper Dimension.
Oh, yay.
Oh, wow, you finished it?
Yeah.
How do you like it overall?
The game itself is... I have to admit, kind of bland. It's not the best, but it put a smile on my face throughout the entirety of the thing. So, I mean, that was well worth $20.
That's fair.
I mean, when the characters have such great names as CyberConnect 2, Marvelous AQL, Mages, Falcom, I'm playing again through it again on a new game plus because there's a character I couldn't get because you can only get three of the four on any given playthrough. And that's only because two of them come as a pair. So I got Rom and Ram and Nepgear, but I didn't get Uni.
Uni?
Yes.
I don't.
They're the sisters for three of the four places. Rom and Ram are Blanc's little sisters. Uni is Noir's little sister, and Nepgear is Neptune's little sister.
Wait, Neptune has a little sister?
Yeah, Neptune's got a little sister. It shocks everybody when you find out that she is the older sister, but I wish
based on appearance, I'm assuming.
And attitude. Nepgear is more mature than Neptune.
Although, hard drive divinity Neptune is fairly mature, so.
True. Nepgear's HDD gets a gun. Like, her sword changes to a gun. Which is actually kind of funny. Unfortunately, because they're like,
oh, you know what Neptune is a reference to? I just realized this. This is Sega Saturn.
It can't be the Sega Saturn.
Why not?
The Saturn because the Sega Saturn was out of business by the time this game was made.
And maybe they had a hard-on for the Sega Saturn. Like, what else could it be a reference to? Come on.
Know.
Also, the Nepgear? Come on!
Considering the other ones are the 360, the Wii, and the PS3?
Sega Nepgear does kind of make sense, though.
Sega Game Gear?
Yeah.
Yep.
I
just can't
to look
think
it
of
up.
What else Neptune would be a reference to.
I mean, that makes it perfect to be the plucky protagonist, right? Not relevant for years. And
I suppose that's true. I thought it was supposed to be like a hypothetical fourth spot, whereas the other three were.
I mean,
I thought so
an
too.
Character makes sense too.
I wish they had more lines, but because they're unlockable characters, they really don't.
They're just kind of there.
I got the normal ending, which apparently the perfect ending involves them more, or the true ending, but.
Turns out all the handhelds are actually more popular. And, I mean, did I say handhelds? I meant little sisters.
DS Chad is the most popular of all. But she's fighting the evil Iphonia.
Which one would that... Would ROM or RAM be the DS, you think?
Wait, where's the android in all of this?
No one cares.
I'm sorry, the cyborg.
For some reason... He's in DC. For some reason...
He has a trucker hat.
For some reason, Vert doesn't get a sister.
Microsoft doesn't have a handheld.
The ending just really reinforced how terrible they all are at their jobs, with the exception of Noir. Like,
what exactly do they do? Theoretically, they govern their cities.
Yeah,
they're
supposed to govern their cities. Neptune regularly sneaks out and goes in hot and hangs out at Compa's house.
Well, Blanc
spends all of her time writing fanfic.
Is this before or after losing their memories due to intervention from outside?
Only Neptune loses her memories. Okay. No one else does. But, like, Blanc spends all of her time writing fanfics.
So all those badasses who are, like, trying to kill each other in that opening sequence...
are brought together by Neptune.
Okay. Well, my biggest thing is that, you know, they're, like, presented to these lords of their realms, and apparently they're all just completely ineffective magistrates.
It's not that they're completely ineffective magistrates. They're just really lazy, generally speaking. Like, Noir's
good
at her job.
Why do they care?
Noir's good at her job. Vert actually, like, they, like, run their place. They actually like running it. It's just they have hobbies that tend to overwhelm them because they're caricatures.
My question is, why were they at war? What were they actually fighting
over? They wanted
over?
Because to be the like the overlord goddess.
Yeah, the true goddess of whatever. But like
game industry,
only be one.
But like, if they don't care enough to actually rule their city, why do they care enough to expand their city?
Because they want to be most popular.
Oh yeah, no, that still doesn't make any goddamn sense. Write your fanfics.
All in all, I think it's a lot of fun, despite the fact that it is not the best game I've ever played. But it's fun, the characters are enjoyable, and the combat is functional, despite the fact that there are mechanics that are hidden that I really wish weren't, mechanics that I wish had more influence that don't, that also aren't explained. But it's a good romp. It's nice and fun. It's a fun game. If you can get it for like $20, it's worth that. I don't think I'd pay more for it.
I think I got it for $7.50, so... Jeremy, what all the games have you completed?
I've completed all the games, but I finally completed Bravely Default.
Sweet!
I even beat the super secret optional boss, who was super easy. He just had infinity hit points and a companion that revived him unless you killed them on the same turn.
Wow, that's really obnoxious.
He didn't do it once to me.
Say, is that telegraphed well enough that you know that that's going to happen?
He always revives the partner, but no. It took so long that I looked it up because I was like, does this guy actually have infinite HP because he can't hurt me meaningfully? But he isn't dying.
So it was just a battle of who could out-tank who?
Yeah, well, it's more that my setup negated half of his damage and had decent healing.
You had Mundo versus Maokai.
Yep,
pretty No
much.
One can kill each other.
But he was super easy. The penultimate boss was actually kind of hard. I had to change my strategy. And then the ultimate boss is really cutscene-y. It's not quite like the end of Final Fantasy X, where you can sleep your way through it, but... It's mostly hit this guy to get next cutscene, watch cutscene, be kind of disappointed at this ending.
Seem over!
Then the other game I beat was Metal Gear Solid 5, and I talked about it last week. I said I got to the halfway point. What I didn't really emphasize, and I kind of meant to, was when you beat level 30 of 50 in Metal Gear Solid 5, it really feels like the end of the game. It kind of sets up two subplots, or not subplots, but two plots to continue the game story, and you get a sizzle reel after, like, next time on Metal Gear Solid. But the game is about revenge, and since Kojima wanted to emphasize the emptiness of revenge, he thought it would be cool if you killed the main boss halfway through the game.
And then there's, like, nothing left
and
for you to do.
And then there's just kind of an emptiness after, which is a cool idea.
It doesn't make for a great game.
Not only that, of the last 20 levels, only 6 of them are levels. The other 14 are optional challenges on earlier levels. Also, the game has 3 endings and doesn't have an ending. By which I mean, this game was somewhat infamously pushed out by Konami before it was done, because they wanted to banish Kojima to the moon.
For reasons unknown.
Because he was spending all of their money making Metal Gear Solid 5 and not selling Metal Gear Solid 5 to
or making pachinko machines.
Yes.
But what about PT? Come on!
So literally the last level, the story's ending, was cut from the game.
What?
That's what I said when I first heard about this. It's all horror. You want to cut one thing, cut a middle level. Don't cut the ending!
And a bunch of the levels, like I said, I think were made optional challenges. I think those would have been actual levels if the game had been finished. I can't say that for sure. So if you want to see the ending, YouTube is a thing, or also if you bought the special edition, you have a making of Blu-ray that has the mostly complete cutscenes from it.
And then you can watch as Kojima is like, I'm going to leave this game unfinished.
It's just super bizarre, especially since, like I said, there are 3 endings. There are 3 credit sequences. The one at the end of level 30, there's one of your like companions has like a personal quest thing you can go through that has an ending. And then there's this weird Fight Club-esque twist that doesn't actually change the game in any way. And it's like, I see what you were trying to do here, Kojima, but...
In reality, Solid Snake is Ocelot?
Yes. Also, wait, Ocelot really? Doesn't betray you. Ocelot, canonically, his loyalties are to the boss, but it's super weird that throughout the game, he's always just giving you solid advice and being your pal and doing the right thing. I was always waiting for that knife in the back, and it never came.
Good guy Revolver Ocelot. Never
yeah, whereas Miller, who's supposed to be like your best friend, is always like, no, just kill everyone. Snake, why are you saving people? This is a terrible idea. Snake, we need revenge. Also, there are no boss fights after that point, and there weren't many before that point either, which is weird.
Well, that's because you could be stealing tanks instead.
And they're building up to this last story mission. There's a bunch of stuff that's just like building the plot, and then it's just super bizarre. Like I said, there's a secret Fight Club style ending that's like presented as like the secret true ending, but it also
not
like, just
super
doesn't
satisfying.
Have any impact. Part of the problem, I don't think this is all the problem. I think I actually enjoyed the game more because of this. I accidentally found out the secret ending while I was playing the first level because I was like, huh, I wonder who's voice acting this character. And I started typing in a character voice actor into Google and my mom came down and I talked to her and then I looked and it had auto completed to like, blank is actually blank. And I had seen a YouTube video that was named Theme, Theme, and Theme, an analysis of Metal Gear Solid 5. And I'm like, oh.
Oh, you accidentally found out. Because of that, you accidentally found out the big twist of the game.
But it's not a very good twist, so I'm not sure if it actually, it's just super weird. I was super happy with the game when I got to the first ending. And it was, my feeling was like, oh my god, it's like they already gave me the sequel and I already bought it. Sizzle reels are awesome, but it was just so weird playing the last half of that.
Which is probably the effect he was going for, honestly.
I think to a degree, but I think he was setting up a story to be finished.
And then just didn't get to finish it?
Yeah. I mean, spoilers, it ends with Liquid Snake on an island, Lord of the Flies style, with a Metal Gear. And he's just there because they cut the level where you go deal with that.
So he's just like, yep, I got a Metal Gear. I'm on an island.
Yep. And Big Boss is like, I'm going to have to deal with that.
Coconut.
Eventually.
Maybe they're actually setting themselves up to make a movie about it.
Like, it would make perfect DLC, right? But they're not going to do any DLC for this.
Going and fighting Liquid Snake over his lawn chair and coconut.
To be honest, the entire game after level 30 probably should have been just DLC.
Which would let you finish those up.
But, Konami gets some money for their game after production. It's just, it's a weird situation. And it's kind of too bad because Kojima went out on a high note at the very least. But It's just so bizarre. I'm not mad at the game, and it doesn't have an ending, which is... And you'd think that would upset you a little bit, and it's just a bizarre feeling.
Speaking of bizarre twists in games...
Yeah, this week we played Knights of the Old Republic, one of the most infamous twist games.
We should probably spoilers alert, just in case anybody
It's like 20 years old.
Yeah, but there is the
option
of
somebody...
My brother
played it like 4 years ago, not knowing, and it blew his mind.
Okay.
So if you haven't played KOTOR and you intend to...
Spoiler alert, there are Jedi.
Yeah, stop listening. I can't imagine anyone is going to stop listening, but that's my advice. Also, I don't recommend you play this game, so...
You know what won Game of the Year it came out?
Yes, it did.
It was so good when I played it the first time.
But what else came out in 2003? Smash Bros. Didn't come out that year. Zelda didn't come out that year.
I feel like
Halo didn't come out that
year. Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like Halo was already out.
Final Fantasy didn't come out that year.
Fair enough. Portal didn't come out until, like, 2005, I want to say?
Portal came out on 360.
Shadow of the Colossus was a year earlier.
Was, I think, 4 or 5 years after this game came out.
That's fair.
Anyway... Knights of the Old Republic is a Star Wars game by BioWare, who you probably know now as the kind of action RPG company that BioWare owns that made that Star Wars MMO that we laugh at sometimes.
BioWare does indeed own BioWare.
Yep. And also EA owns BioWare. But at this point, they were known basically for making Dungeons & Dragons ports.
Neverwinter Nights was a great
Baldur's
game.
Gate.
All these are games I didn't play, but probably should have because I'm a nerd.
Neverwinter Nights 2 is pretty good. I kind of want to get back to that one eventually.
And so, for those of you who don't know, still, and at the time, Dungeons & Dragons was owned and produced by Wizards of the Coast. And so, the Wizards made a Star Wars game with basically the D&D rules. And so KOTOR was just an adaptation of a Star Wars RPG using those rules.
I owned that game.
We played it once.
Yeah, we played it a few times.
Matt played a Will.
Then I did indeed own this game.
Remember Tyler got drunk off milk?
Yeah, that's
oh,
where
that
came
funny.
From. And I can never hit anything
with
my...
Were you on Calamari, or was that Chris?
No, I was a human soldier.
I think that was Chris, yeah.
I just could never hit anything with my amazing dexterity and my...
I know one of you with a Mon Calamari with, like, a plus 35 to computers at level 5.
Tyler, I feel like we must have
You're not
that.
Narrowing down any games you've played when you say, I couldn't hit anything with my amazing blank. Because
Blaster
you can never
rifle.
Hit anything with your amazing blank.
I don't often have amazing blanks.
Your swordmaster...
Oh, God damn it, he was such a good character. That was a great build, if only I could roll dice.
You had 2 18s, 2 17s, a 16, and a 15.
Well,
and
his
still couldn't hit anything.
His skills were so complementary to each other, it was great, and then I couldn't hit anything.
Yeah, so this is an adaptation of the D20 system, and I don't know if it's... Like, they say Neverwinter Nights is really good, and I haven't played it. So I don't know if it's just Star Wars, it was going to be more mainstream, they took a step back. I don't know if because this was an Xbox
it's
console
a simplification.
Game, they wanted to simplify it more.
I think that's probably
I don't know what the case is, but it just doesn't feel very well translated to me. They streamed like things quite a bit. For those of you who don't know, in D20, the main cool things you get are called feats. They just give you new abilities. They were really streamlined well for this game. All of them come in 3 tiers, whereas cured feats are kind of rare in... D20 version?
Yeah, because you basically have like power attack and improved power attack, and that's pretty much it.
The problem is in D20, feats are usually really cool things because they let you do something new. In this game, they are just kind of, usually they're just slightly improving something you could do, none of which is super interesting. And the bigger problem is that D20 just is not a good system for a video game.
It works fine on the tabletop and for handling something like this where you have the kind of the larger-than-life hero can take blaster bolts to the face and not care. But in a video game, because it's a turn-based system, you spend most of your time watching your characters act it out.
And the thing is, they don't even explain it to you. They don't really explain the system to you at all.
No, I remember when I first saw this game, I was playing it with my friend who didn't play D&D. And so he was looking to create his character, and he's sitting there looking at it going, I don't know what it is. And so he asks me, since I played D&D and knew what all the terms meant, I had to explain it to him. Which, that's not good for a game. Yes, there is a little blurb that explains, strength does this, dexterity does this, intelligence does this. But when you're first looking at it, it's meaningless.
It doesn't even really explain to you that it's turn-based, because you can queue actions up, and a lot of times people I know... I've seen it. We'll just keep clicking attack, thinking it makes them attack faster.
Yeah, it is a hidden turn-based thing, which, from an animation standpoint, is kind of cool. But because
it
they don't actually explain that it's a turn-based mechanical system, it's actually kind of a problem. In my opinion, it's actually better to set this game so that it pauses after every turn.
Yeah, and I do that too. But even then, it feels like the game is fighting me. Like, I'll be like, okay, attack, attack, attack. And then I'll come back and I'm like, why do you have three power attacks here? This is not what I said. What is going on? Karth, I want you to rapid blast all the time. That's why I click rapid blast. What are you doing, Karth?
I always preferred power attack.
Regardless of what I prefer, it would not go.
Oh, I never had that problem on the Xbox. I didn't get far enough in my computer to really see that show up.
So for those of you who don't know, the basic way D20 works is you have a goodness number for how good you are at hitting things.
Which has a defensive number that you're trying to beat.
You roll a 20-sided die, so you get a random number between 1 and 20.
And add that to your goodness.
You add your goodness, and if that's more than the armor number of the thing you're trying to hit, you hit them. All well and good. But dice rolling systems aren't great for...
Honestly, the dice rolling is just there to make it feel like there's some random chance for your actions as opposed to just, like, interacting in a story. Because tabletop games, let's face it, could really just be two people talking back and forth.
Yep. And I think the bigger problem here
I don't run them.
Is even if you know what's going on because you're the biggest dork of all time, like me, you don't see what you rolled on your D20. So you have no idea if you're missing a guy because you're getting unlucky or because you're using the wrong move. And that's really important because the few special moves you have are usually things like lowers your chance to hit, lowers your goodness number, but if you do hit, you get all these cool bonuses.
Which is why Critical Strike is the best.
But you don't know if you can afford to take the lack of being able to hit things, because you might never hit it. You have no idea.
And you only have like three options, even if you take all the feats, which are Attack a Bunch, Critical Strike like Zach likes, or Power Strike. So there's just not a lot of tactical choice. Also, in D20, it's a grid-based system. You move like you might in a Fire Emblem-type game. This game just has free-flowing movement, so it takes even that away, and it's just a terrible system overall, I think.
Actually, most of the video games that have implemented the D20 system are free-flowing movement.
Yeah, but a lot of them, I think, interact with the rest of the system better. Neverwinter Nights, for example, feels a lot better.
Well, that's because they basically just lifted a D&D 3.5 player's handbook and stuck it in a printer.
I think this game might have my least favorite combat system of any game I've ever played. I could probably find a worse one. I mean, Prince of Persia is probably worse. And there's probably more than that. There's gotta be another one, but really, it's just unfun to me. What you're really playing this game for is the dialogue trees. And if you've ever played a BioWare game since then, they basically work the same. You have a bunch of options. Because it's Star Wars, some of them give you light side points. Some of them gave you dark side points. And they're basically just letting you navigate through the story at your own pace, which is kind of cool. They're not very well written at this point, I don't think.
Mass Effect was much better.
See, this is the thing. That's why I wanted to play Final Fantasy VII and Planescape Torment. Because 7 doesn't give you dialogue options, but it's kind of a... At the time KOTOR came out, it was probably the gold standard of RPG stories. And Planescape Torment was definitely the gold standard of choose-your-own-dialogue type games. So I'm really curious how this compares to them.
Is it bad that I've never heard of Planescape, like, ever?
I've never heard of it either.
Considered the best Dungeons & Dragons game of all time.
I've never even heard of this game.
It has a succubus paladin.
That's awesome!
That's a thing?
Yeah, she's trying to reject her demon nature, and so she's trying to be good, but she has to fight her sex addiction. And she's one of your potential party members.
How does she live if she's not?
Sounds fantastic.
I think there's a hand wife. I've never actually played Planescape Torment, or I would be talking about
it. Is that
on
GOG?
It is.
Yeah, so this already sounds like a much better game, so.
But at the time, if you were an Xbox guy, all you had was Halo, so this game was like magic, because it was good and completely different. But this game is a breath of fresh air for many of those. That said, the combat is so different, it's weird that it took off. That Star Wars brand goes a long way.
It gave it a lot of forgiveness.
As you said before we started recording, the lightsaber noises are cool.
I regularly would run down hallways just clearing my action queue.
Me too.
Yes.
And I think they kind of ultimately fail, but they do a real attempt at trying to make this feel like just another Star Wars movie. And while I think they fail, I have to applaud the effort.
I mean, it starts with the standard Star Wars text
call
crawl
to action.
And...
Well, it starts with the text crawl, and the next bit is very Star Wars, too. But let's talk about the text crawl for just a second, because I think it's terrible.
Don't you think is terrible in this game?
HK-47, Jolie Bindo.
The reveal is actually pretty decent.
Yeah, no, the twist is really good, and the way the twist is built up to. And I know there's one other thing.
I was just curious, because pretty much every time we've come to anything, you're like, I think it's terrible.
I do. I think this game is... I really wish we'd played previous games, so if I knew if it's just a thing of, I wonder if this is people's first RPG, because I know a lot of people for whom that's the case. And if you've never played RPGs before and you discover this one, it's not a terrible place to start. I want to know if it's just the Star Wars brand, or I want to know if RPGs back then were kind of in a place where this one was a huge improvement.
This was the first one I ever beat.
This is one of the first 3D RPGs I ever played, the other being Final Fantasy VII, and I think we all know my opinion of Final Fantasy VII, so.
I don't, actually, offhand, overrated.
I think it's one of the worst RPGs ever made.
See,
so.
I won't go that far, but I do think it's overrated. That said, I've only gotten out of Midgar. I've never actually beaten VII.
Well,
yeah, this is actually the first RPG I think I can ever remember beating.
So, and I'm really curious why did this take off so well, because I don't think BioWare's success is undeserved. And part of the problem is I've played Mass Effect, and in many ways, Mass Effect is just a way better version of KOTOR.
Yeah, except without lightsabers. That noise.
Basically without melee combat.
My problem with the text crawl, though, I was going to elaborate. I didn't just want to call it bad. I don't think it does a very good job of establishing the setting.
I actually don't remember the text crawl well enough to remember what it says about the setting.
I don't either.
It's 4,000 years before the Battle of Yavin. There was a war, and then two Jedi fell to the dark side, and now they're causing problems.
Well, that's super descriptive.
I think it's longer than that.
Isn't this also the one that establishes the Sith as a race of people, as opposed to, like, a
No, actually,
way
that comes
thinking?
Up later. Right
if
now, they're
does,
not actually
it's not
a race
in the text
of
scroll.
People. That comes up, but this game doesn't actually establish them as a race of people.
Okay. I forget which one does.
But anyway, right after the text crawl, we see a ship being attacked by another ship, which again, super, super Star Wars. I think this is...
super, super Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, I have to distinguish it from the game Super Star Wars. Kind of also have problems with... The reason I keep up bringing up Final Fantasy VII is the thing that I think still holds up about it is the FMV cutscenes. I mean, obviously we can do better now, but they still have a bit of spectacle. And I feel like the cutscenes are just missing something in this game, and I can't put my finger on it. I'm not sure if it would have been better with Final Fantasy-style ones, or if they just needed to direct them a little better. But
I like the opening battle.
Impact. Basically, you're immediately grabbed by a guy who has... And this is a problem, is the voice acting in this game a little uneven, mostly towards good. The guy who meets you and is giving you the tutorial not know how acting work. He's like, come on, we gotta do the thing. Come on, the thing. Bastila, the thing. It's not a good first impression, is my point.
You take his gear away.
So basically, you're on this ship being attacked. You don't really remember who you are. You don't say that, but you don't have the dialogue option to choose who you were. You're in medias res, which is a good way to start a game. He's like, hang on, we have to save Bastila. She's the Jedi that's on this ship, and she'll know what to do.
And they kind of hand-wave the fact that you have no idea who he is.
Yeah.
Well, presumably he found another human on the ship, and he's like, hey, we should go
stuff. No, they explain, like...
He's your roommate, but you, like,
you're
sleep
opposite,
at different times?
Yeah, you're opposite shifts, so you never really
Maybe
see
you've just
other.
Been in a fugue state for the last couple months operating
that
No, this
is actually
state.
What the game says.
Oh, yeah. Well...
Maybe you're an RPG and you sprung up from the ground. That's actually kind of... The twist is really good, but one of the costs they pay for the twist is that you are an RPG character that sprung from the earth, which is... That's why I can't get into Obsidian games, to be honest. Not Obsidian. Bethesda games. Bethesda?
Bethesda is the one that does Morrowind, if that's the
one you're
trying to
think of. Yeah, that's what I'm
trying to think of. That's Bethesda.
I always feel like I am a rock person who has sprung into jail from the rocks, and Patrick Stewart is there telling me what's up.
Well, that's why everyone's surprised there's a prisoner in there, is because a prisoner didn't exist 5 minutes ago.
That is true.
Like,
they always do seem kind of surprised that there's a prisoner.
A plot must exist. Therefore, a character has sprung into being to participate.
What Elder Scrolls games do you not start as a prisoner in? Arena?
I don't know. I've only ever played Oblivion and Skyrim.
You do in Morrowind, too. You start on a boat as a prisoner.
As opposed to a cart as a prisoner, or actually in a prison as a prisoner?
Yep.
So you go through the ship, it's basically the tutorial, which as we already established isn't great. I also have a problem with one particular scene, which is you see a Jedi fighting a Sith, which should be a cool scene, but it doesn't really have much impact.
Well, especially because it's done in Gameplay Engine, which has all the same animations that you're going to see a lot.
So you're just going, vroomk, wait a second, vroomk, wait a second.
The two characters don't stand out at all, and the Sith later on ends up becoming like a sort of minor antagonist. But, and this is supposed to be his introduction, but he just seems like some random guy, and you just file him away. And later you're like, oh no, it's that guy on the ship. I'm like, wait, what? It is?
No, that one, that Sith dies. The one that's fighting the Jedi dies.
Well, later when you fight Darth Bandon, one of you's like, oh no, it's that Sith who beat the Jedi where we were on the...
No, that Sith dies. You're thinking of the one that that shows up later when you lose Trask because he's not actually part of the party.
Ah, okay. Well, at any point,
they have the same model, so I know why you'd think that.
It's done in engine. It's not impressive. And also, you can't take their lightsabers, even though there's a corpse with a lightsaber right there. And how much better would it have been if that happened on a raised platform, if it was done not quite in engine? You saw the Sith triumph and you saw the Sith take the lightsaber. Cause then you still want the lightsaber, but it makes sense why you can't go and pick it up because it's not there.
Again, the Jedi actually wins that fight.
Okay. Well, they die and then you
die. No, because a shot blows them up.
See, but
apparently a conduit explodes at exactly the wrong moment.
Doesn't this lend to my point, though, that this isn't very interesting or memorable when this is when the game needs to be grasping you?
I remember it. I don't really.
So anyway, tutorial man dies of bad voice acting. And the ship's pilot, Cartho Nasi, contacts you, and you two escape via escape pods onto the nearby planet.
To the worst planet ever conceived.
It's not Tatooine.
It's totally not Coruscant.
It's less fun than Tatooine, though.
Yeah, but which is bizarre, because Tatooine's a desert. Just a big desert.
So you end up on Terrace, which is basically Coruscant, only they acknowledge the depth. Basically, the theme of the planet is rich versus poor, and there's like an undercity where all the poor live. And your goal is you have to find Bastila, because she escaped, but you don't know where she is. So it's you and Karth, BFFs, except for he's super emo, and he's like, oh, I can't talk to you because I can't trust you. And he's also light side. So we talked about the dialogue tree, how you have light side and dick side options. Except for any time you try to indulge in the dark side, and those are the worst written options, because they're always...
Kick puppies.
Like, yeah, kick puppy, burn orphanage. Like, as someone said, really, if you want a dark side game, you should have three options, right? Be cryptically menacing, threaten, and force choke. Those are never your options. It's always, you should give me more money for this quest I did for you. And just these really dickish things rather than ambitious things. But anyway, if you're the sort of player who gets off on that and wants to indulge, Karth will admonish you like your mother every time you do, which just makes it feel like the game is punishing for you. And the story, I think, is more natural and interesting if you go light side. But
is the canon one. That is the canon version of the story.
If they're going to give you dark side options, they shouldn't punish you for using them. It just off really off to me.
Dark side force powers are way better. And that's one of the mechanics is, depending on how you talk to people, determines what force powers you get to use.
But you're still in sort of the tutorial phase of the game, so it's really easy to take that is true. As the game telling you, hey, don't be a dick. When it's really Karth telling you that, and even the dark side characters later on will like nag at you for choosing light side options, but you don't have them early on.
At least none of them are Morrigan. Jesus.
There's actually only two dark side characters in the game.
The thing is, Morrigan comes off like this antisocial asshole, so like it works.
Morrigan is like me.
Morrigan is such a caricature of like independent survivalist. That man, oh no, I don't know how anyone like that could possibly exist. They probably do.
Neither do I, but I'm in a game with dragons and stuff, and all the other characters are more reasonable, so
yeah,
she comes up as contrast. And she and Alistair play well off each other. Who does Karth have to play off of?
You.
Bastila, in theory.
Except for, you can also never have the last word with him. You can tell Morrigan to stop being a git. You can't tell Karth to ball up.
Yeah, it would be better if he had more interactions with Candorous, because Candorous is like Karth through a mirror darkly, but they never actually interact. So that's kind of out the window.
Yep.
So you meet a spunky Twi'lek rogue named Mission, who's a dumb teenager, but she's crafty and good at computers. She has a Wookiee. He also joins your party.
He's also an interesting.
Mission was my favorite character when I first played this game when I was like 14 or
Mission
something.
Mission is the best written of the characters on Taris. I just didn't want a crappy teenager. I like Gundam. Crappy teenagers are the best. Don't get me wrong. Nope. I just don't super care for Mission in particular.
The only thing I think is actually interesting about Taris is the Rancor. Because you can get through it by being super difficult and kind of silly.
You know what I...
By shooting it.
Yep.
Or you can put a grenade in the pile of body parts.
Which is great.
And kill it that way.
Although it basically just tells you to do that, right?
Like, yes, but it's really easy to miss that you can, because that's also partly the tutorial saying you can move stuff into the other things. It's never something you need to use again.
Yeah, it never comes up again.
No, yes, it does.
It does?
On Korriban, there's one of the temples, like the one with the three swords. You have to put a grenade in something to get it out of
there. Oh, yeah.
But it does not come up often. So anyway, you came up with mission and work for Green Lantern. It's not Green Lantern, but he has the same voice actor as Green Lantern from Justice League, which was airing at the same time as this. Who is
the
Green Lantern mob boss.
Okay, the Hidden Beck.
Yeah.
Gadden is his name.
Yes, they enter you in a swoop race, which brings us to the one part about gameplay we didn't talk about, which is the little mini games, which are even worse than the actual combat.
I hate Pazok. I like swoop racing.
Oh, I love Pazok.
I hate
swoop racing. And actually, like most Star Wars games, this has turret sections. Maybe they're okay on Xbox. That is the slowest moving turret of all time.
It's still the slowest moving turret of all time.
But moving it with a mouse, I had to go about 12 mouse pads to go like a little bit to the right.
Jeez.
I, at multiple times, threw my mouse across the room because I was just sliding it along. Anyway, I don't think they're very bad. Swoop racing is just like Mario Kart, only there aren't other carts on the thing. You're just trying to hit boosters.
Well,
aren't turns.
I like time travel, or time trials.
I like time travel too.
I also kind of like drag racing and stuff like Pro Street, and it feels like a drag race to me, which is why I enjoy it.
I didn't
dislike
it.
It's actually fairly well implemented, but if you don't like those kind of things, you're not going to like it anyway. Just like, I don't like games of chance in games like that, so I don't like
But I feel like this is a super uninteresting, like, I will agree with you, this is not a type of gameplay I like. Also, just trying to judge it on its merits, I feel like this is the least interesting possible version of, like, a drag race. I guess if the boosters weren't there, it would be less interesting, but...
Having played many drag race, this has more gameplay mechanics than a drag race typically does, because what is a drag race? It's...
Hit gas, shift occasionally.
Exactly.
Maybe dodge stuff.
Anyway, you win Bastila in a swoop race, you have to fight the people that were keeping her captive, and then... We meet Bastila, who is sort of a different sort of Jedi. She's very headstrong and arrogant. But again, like Karth, who is your mom, she starts by saying, well, you're terrible at rescuing me, noob. And again, like with Karth, you can't tell her to stop being a git. You can't even try to get the last word with her, which is annoying, and it's not a good introduction for her. Because you did save her. If she actually saved you, it might work better.
I think when you try, Karth ends up with the last word with her. I can't remember exactly, but I know Karth kind of tells her off when you do it.
Karth always gets the last word.
So now with Bastila and Teo, you have to get off the planet, which we didn't mention is Sith blockaded, because the Sith are up in space shooting you.
Which
and
is,
they wait,
presumably they're hunting for you or
they
something.
They wait just long enough for you to break into the Sith base, steal their launch code, steal a ship, and leave.
Well, yeah, with the help of a Mandalorian named Candorus, who is just, like Zach said, evil Karth. Although he's not even really evil. He's not really interesting, but he's more interesting than the others because they try to give the Mandalorians this honor before reason sort of background, which is at least something. And he follows you basically throughout the game because you are good at stabbing things. You also get the most boring droid ever, not R2-D2.
Yeah, well, Candorus follows you around because you're good at stabbing things and you're good to find a fight. I think that is entirely his motivation. T3-M4 is one of the most boring droids ever made. He's a droid. He needs special health packs to heal. He gets certain droid things, but he doesn't benefit from almost anything else you can do.
He's also a terrible combat character, and this game tries to make skills important by giving you computers to slice in and murder people with, and droids to send to murder people. But it's just never as useful as having a combat character or having those skills yourself.
Well, it would be better, even in that case, to bring Mission for those skills, because she has all those skills.
She doesn't have computer use, but...
I thought she had computers. Is a pretty ubiquitous skill. I think Bastila has it.
Yeah, she does.
But, like...
Jolie has it, too.
You, like, bring Mission or something instead of T3, because they will benefit from Force powers to help the party. You don't have to carry around special med packs for them.
That's the annoying thing about droids.
Granted,
they use a lot of different
equipment. They
do get
special gear that let them do fun stuff, like the disruptor beam.
But there's a way better droid who has a personality that you get later.
Well, yes, I know. I'm just
saying. But you don't know.
I'm saying droids in general are
the first time I played this game. I ran around with Mission and not R2-D2.
Why?
I can get Mission. She is useful, and like I said, she's the most likable character, but. The other thing about T4 is he doesn't talk and is as boring as bricks.
And you can't even though your character seems to understand him, you as the
part of the
reader
plot point
can't see it.
There's this weird plot point that I do think is kind of cool, that your character just speaks every language, and people acknowledge that this is weird and special. So I kind of like that.
I wish, even if they included the beeps, because they include all of the random alien speech in the game, which is kind of annoying. T3 always shows up as beeps on in like the subtitle, which is annoying, because like if my character understands it and he's clearly talking as though he understands it, why can't I?
Or, you know, put the protocol droid with him and let him translate for you, because he's everyone's favorite character, and that would give character to both of them. Anyway, you escape in the totally not Millennium Falcon, the Ebon Hawk, defeating some random-ass bounty hunter who was mean to you in a bar on the way out. They tried to establish him as a villain by having him be mean to you in a bar, and then you fight him.
I actually totally ignore him in that bar. So, like, he's supposed to be this mean dude that you talk to. I don't really ever talk to him until I get into a fight with him over the Ebon Hawk.
I thought as soon as you go into that bar, though, like, you see him kill some people.
You see him kill some people, but he doesn't directly interact with you.
And then you just ignore him.
Yeah, but the game is clearly trying to establish him as a badass. It's the GM being like, look how cool my NPC is, bros.
Yeah, I know what it's trying to do. I'm just saying that he doesn't actually directly interact with you, which means that your investment in taking that character on and down is lessened.
Not disagreeing with you. So you beat him, you get to the Ebon Hawk. As you're doing this, the Sith, led by Darth Malak, who doesn't have a great design, has decided they're just going to shoot the planet with lasers until it turns into Alderaan. It
takes them a while.
They're trying to echo the destruction of Alderaan, clearly, and it's an okay job, but again, it doesn't have the impact. We do get a pre-rendered cutscene for this, but because Terrace is terrible...
You're rooting for the Sith at this point.
It doesn't feel like destruction, and I don't want to go too far in a tangent, but I talked about how I don't like Man of Steel. Part of the problem with Man of Steel is at the end, Metropolis gets destroyed, but you don't give a because there's no one in Metropolis you care about. Conversely, if we look at a movie like Batman Begins, a much better superhero movie, halfway through the movie, Batman meets King Joffrey, who is being abused by his parents, and gives him a pair of bat binoculars and a batarang to, like, be cool. And at the end, when Scarecrow's sphere gas is taking over, we see King Joffrey in danger.
I like how you're calling him King Joffrey.
He's played by the same actor.
I know, but...
He doesn't have a name in the movie, I don't think. So you don't want King Joffrey to die because Game of Thrones hasn't come out yet. You will find this ironic a few years later. But in Man of Steel, there's no one there, so there's no one we care about. It's the same problem here. There's no one left on Terrace that
because all the interesting people came with you.
Mission, like, that's her home. But everyone she knew is established as not being on the planet when you leave.
Anyone that she is not, or anyone she's close to, is established as not being on planet. And Gadden, maybe.
But Green Lantern is kind of a dick, and he, like, uses you and makes you do all the work.
But see, I actually kind of like Gadden, because he uses you, makes you do all the work, but freely acknowledges and tells you, I'm totally using you and making you do all the work.
Yeah, but, like, I'm...
So, it's kind of a... He is a likable character in the fact that he's being honest about being an asshole to you.
But even if you like Gadden, it's not like they show him dying.
No.
We don't even really see the destruction very well. So you can kind of...
You see a couple of buildings get blown up, and you're like, okay, that's
Nor can
that's
you go back and see it. I just don't think it's very well done.
Well, part of the problem is, one of the reasons it lacks the impact of the destruction of Alderaan, we never even saw anyone on Alderaan in the first movie.
But
right?
You have Carrie Fisher acting the hell out of that scene.
Exactly.
And you have Peter that pushing opposite her, being the biggest dick of like, thank you for telling us where the Rebel base is. We will blow up your planet anyway. I'm the doctor.
The reason why it lacks the impact without those two things anyway is it's just a barrage. It's not just a one thing, blow up the planet super weapon type of deal, which also establishes the power of the weapon. It's just a fleet. Well, it's a bunch of ships stacked up, which the planet's still there. The city's gone, but the planet's still there.
And their hands are kind of tied in that they can't one-up the Death Star 4,000 years earlier, but they have a Super Sith super weapon, we'll find out later.
Yep.
And they could have done some really impressive stuff with it, I think, here, to make this feel like a big deal. And I just feel like they don't.
Like I said, having them, like, suddenly, where did the Sith get all those ships from? That's new.
Yeah, if you just saw, like, a giant fleet, like, that made the one at the Battle of Endor at the second Death Star at the end of Jedi looks tiny. Like, that's conceivable. There's nothing wrong with there being more ships than there were in that war. This just isn't impressive.
Well, then there's not really any emotional impact. Like,
Mission is kind of sad.
Yeah, like, no one really
cares. She's more kind of shell-shocked, but, yeah. Like, you can talk to her about it, but you can't help her work through it. She just kind of gets over it.
Probably because she didn't care about anyone on the planet, so
well,
she's like, oh.
She cared about her gone. We're already off planet, so it's not like they got stuck.
Exactly. She lost her favorite boy band poster.
So. The achievement. No. So then you go to Jedi Planet, which is Dantooine, speaking of Star Wars, and I find that kind of clever and funny. It's not the main Jedi Council there on Coruscant. I don't remember why you go to this backwater Jedi Council.
Because it's closer, maybe the
Sith are
everywhere.
They are members
of
the Jedi Council, it's just not the full one. You only have like four of them there.
It's like a Jedi Council outpost, which is kind of cool. And there, because you have force powers that let you speak every language, and obviously you're cool since you escaped this blockade, they kind of debate about training you. There's the Anakin moment. He's too old, but he's a special case. And this is actually pretty good setup for the twist, which we haven't talked about yet.
Well, they've also mentioned, before that, they've also actually set up a reference point.
Yes,
when
they have.
When you first get to the planet, Karth makes a comment.
Yeah, Karth, it's a pretty cool thing where you're talking about fighting the Sith. And Karth is like, yeah, the Force is pretty crazy. It can even destroy your mind and make you think you're someone else. if you're playing this game again like you're watching Fight Club again for the second time, it really pays off. Unlike Metal Gear 5, where there's one line that you're like, oh, huh, that's actually kind of funny and clever. But it's one line, and they hand wave it as something else, and it's super easy to take that as face value.
Well, there are several lines that they run through and show you that, yeah, we've actually been hinting at this the entire time.
Like I said, KOTOR is really good with this twist. This is a problem with Mass Effect 2 as well. I think the writing in KOTOR is bad, but the fact that they even attempted this twist is super ballsy, and the fact that they pulled it off is incredible. So I can't really say the writing is bad, but a lot of the individual writing is bad. And part of that is probably that you don't have your head writer write every bit of dialogue.
Stephen Moffat.
That's actually one of the main reasons why I think this game actually ended up succeeding as well as it did, is because that twist and...
That's really what stuck with me until we replayed it for the podcast.
I think that's why it's popular critically, and that's why it's important looking back on it. That's why even though I don't recommend it, like I can't say it's garbage and no one should play it. But
it's not Golden Axe or Space Harrier.
No, but the twist is so far in that it's really hard to say it's worth playing to, because the gameplay up to that point is not fun to me. And like I said, I have lots of little problems with the story, which, again, they're trying to make a Star Wars movie and trying to make Fight Club, and you deserve so much credit for getting this close, but I don't think they made it. I think they were greatly helped by the fact that Attack of the Clones had just come out, and oh my god, a decent Star Wars thing. It's like the Star Wars movie we want.
But it didn't have Samuel L. Jackson.
But it didn't have Anakin either.
Yeah, it didn't have, I don't even know his name. Who? Anakin guy. So anyway, you train, you Jedi montage.
Literally,
that is pretty much.
You pick a second class, a Jedi class, as opposed to your rogue scoundrel, rogue scout soldier. You get the choice between consular, sentinel, and guardian.
You faff about on Jedi Planet for a while, and at the end of that, you reach this temple that Revan and Malak supposedly reach. The backstory, since we didn't mention it, is Revan and Malak were Jedi who went to fight in a war they weren't supposed to, won the war, then turned to the dark side. Malak betrayed Revan. Bastila was there when it happened. And so now Malak is in charge.
And somehow doesn't
Malak
recognize
betrayed
you.
Betrayed Revan in kind of a pussy fashion. He blew up his bridge while he was already under attack rather than actually fighting him
Every
over it.
Every character you've ever played in an RPG would be proud, Zach.
I know. Why fight fair when I can fight better?
Honestly, it doesn't even look like you betrayed him at that point.
I didn't betray. It was an accident.
So in this temple, you find like a quarter of a map. And a bunch of other planets that also have parts of maps.
Fifth of a map.
Yeah, I guess there are five, huh?
Guess what? You're going MacGuffin hunting.
Yeah, so the Jedi Council sends you, Bastila, and all the randos you picked up.
Because like, we can't do anything with these randos. Everyone knows randos suck. They're going with you.
To go to these planets, find the map. It leads to something called the Star Forge, which everyone agrees is probably bad news.
They don't actually tell you what it leads to. They just tell you it leads somewhere, if I remember correctly.
No, like Yoda guy is like, this Star Forge, dangerous.
Yeah, they definitely mentioned the Star Forge.
I couldn't remember if they actually did.
They don't know what it is. They're just like, this bad, this probably is.
I kind of like the fact that they did the two like life planets and two death planets, but I think it would have been better off if they'd done something more with it. Like Tatooine is supposed to be one of the life planets, but it's since died, well, something like that, whereas
that's
they
even
really
kind
don't.
Of established. Have you ever talked to the Tusken Raider storyteller? Because that's like the most interesting bit of lore in the game.
Once or twice, but I
actually really like that this game establishes so much of a precursor race in this universe, because even watching the original movies,
I like the fact that the Tusken Raiders are more than just a set dressing.
Also that. They have, like, personalities.
We haven't gotten to the big keys yet, but it is so obvious these people wanted to make Mass Effect and were stuck with Star Wars.
Yep.
But the precursor race, the whole thing with the computer that... Anyway, we'll get to these things hopefully shortly, because this is our longest episode. And
in a while.
It's probably going to be... Well, with how far much more of the game we have, this is going to be our longest episode.
Yeah, that's true.
Generally speaking, you're going to go likely to Kashyyyk. Well, if you're first playing this, you might just pick a random one. We're going to start with Kashyyyk.
Talk about the characters we haven't yet, because they're on Jedi Planet, you meet... what's her name?
Juhani.
Juhani, a cat lady Jedi who... kind of fell to the dark side because the Jedi Council were huge dicks to her.
Her
to
master be fair, specifically was a huge dick.
I really like that motivation for going to the dark side.
I mean, yes, but it makes the Jedi look kind of incompetent, especially when you later consider their plan. When you hit the twist and you realize what their plan was, they seem like they all fell to the dark side already.
Then later on,
on Kashyyyk, you find Jolie Bindo, who is an old cantankerous...
He's the best.
He's a gray... he would be best described as a gray Jedi.
He's a purple paladin.
He's not good. He's not... I've never heard that phrase.
It's an inside joke among this one Mass Effect Let's Play. They're like, yeah, I don't want to be Renegade or Paragon. I want to be a purple paladin.
So he's kind of like not light side, not dark side, kind of walks the middle line.
He's everybody's first RPG character when they play Star Wars, but also he's well written and always plays devil's advocate with you.
Yeah, he's really
and he
about...
he gives you med packs.
And one thing I meant to convey but don't think I have yet, one of my problems with all the characters we've described before Jolie is none of them have any bit of levity. Han Solo has so many funny bits in the Star Wars movies, like when he just jumps at a bunch of stormtroopers... And all the characters are so dour and serious. Jolie is the first fun character.
Mission is kind of
Mission
upbeat.
Isn't, yeah, but she's not funny in any way. She's kind of cheerful, but she doesn't really bring levity. Especially because Karth is yelling at her for being a crappy teenager. Because she's a crappy teenager.
Well,
Zalbar is all emo. Karth, as I said, is emo. And Bastila is kind of a dick to you.
And Candorus is just an asshole.
Yeah. Jolie is the first fun character, and we don't need a ton of fun characters, but that the two characters you get into the game are the fun ones, I think is a big mistake.
And the last character is the best character in the game, which is HK-47.
I don't like HK-47, but I can't disagree he's the best character, because they took C-3PO, a super iconic character, and they're like, well, he's kind of... They did what Bob Kane did with Batman, where he looked at Superman's like, huh. This is a super powerful guy with a regular job who does stuff during the day. I'm going to make a guy with no powers who's super rich and works only at night. HK-47 is that to C-3PO, where clearly they're riffing on C-3PO, but they just make a super different and still super interesting character.
Because he's basically a protocol... Well, he acts like a protocol droid in some instances.
But he's also a deactivated assassin droid.
He's an assassin droid.
He used to work for Revan.
He always refers to you as meatbag.
Which is great. Also, he prefaces his sentences with the type of statement they
like
are.
Like the,
Elcor later
Elcor.
On. Again, these people wanted to make Mass Effect.
Statement.
But
meatbag,
also,
we should kill them all.
Bastila has this a little bit, too. He has a connection to your past that he doesn't know either because his memories, like, aren't intact.
If you have computer use, you can actually unlock his memories.
Yeah, you can actually hack that open.
But even if you don't, when the twist happens, he remembers some stuff, and it's this sort of parallel to Anakin Skywalker building C-3PO, which is dumb, but it is Star Wars. And so it's actually one of the ways... I think HK-47, even though I don't like him personally, is the most successful bit of Knights of the Old Republic, at least outside the twist.
The main problem with him is because, again, he's a droid, he becomes almost impossible to actually use because he doesn't have the ability to access the rest of your party's skills.
Yeah, you always want him with you for the dialogue, but then you never want him with you because of the combat.
I don't even super want him with me for the dialogue because I complained about Karth and Bastila being your moms, but HK-47 gets super upset whenever you do anything good, and since the dick side options are so poorly written, I always want to be good. At least with HK, though, he has to follow your orders, so it kind of makes sense that he'd be going through, like, being like, can we kill them? And when you say no, he's just like a child, like, aw. Where it's like, if you're being bad and you want Karth and Bastila, at some point you have to be like, why are you guys still here?
See, I always liked HK because anytime you do something good and he's with you, it sounds more like he's being sarcastic.
Yeah, it sounds like he's
more sarcastic than rather
well, that's
trying to chide
like
you.
Like I said, he's levity. He's something the game desperately, desperately needs because it's so serious. And Star Wars has its serious parts, but it has a comedy duo that's literally a tall, thin guy and a short, fat guy.
Is that
C-3PO and R2-D2?
Okay, I was trying to figure that out because you mentioned Han having his own. Like,
Han is also
not that
funny.
Short.
Like Chewie gets some funny bits through Han. Even Leia and Luke get to be funny sometimes. The villains are never really funny.
Yeah, so where's Vader's comedy?
But that's fine.
Yeah, it is.
They're the straight guys.
No disintegrations.
So you have four planets to go to. Again, like Mass Effect. You get to choose what order you want to do them, but
Mass Effect's only got three.
Do Kashyyyk first, because that's where Jolie Bindo is, and he's the best.
The problem with most of the planets is that you have a lot of aliens gargling at you.
Yeah, there's a lot of alien speak, and they only use clips from the Star Wars movies, which makes it feel like Star Wars, but there are like 10 Wookiee growls. And you get like 50 per sentence, and you're like, oh my god, this Wookiee is so boring.
You know, turns out he's actually just really verbose.
The solution to this?
Skip dialogue?
Mute.
Yeah, but yeah. So the Kashyyyk plot is that Zerka Corp, which are, again, these really poorly defined villains, they're just this vaguely evil corporation. You don't know
who
if they
also sell
with
you
Sith.
All your stuff.
You don't really know anything about them except for that they're bigger dicks than the Sith. But the thing is, they're ineffectual dicks. The Sith, I don't really get their motivation, but Star Wars doesn't need complex morality. They just want to take over the galaxy. And I wish there was more to them than that, but there doesn't have to be. Zerka are just dicks to everyone. Anyway, they're slaving Wookiees. They've teamed up with Zalbro's brother to enslave Wookiees. So you have to go get Zalbar's father. One interesting thing is whatever planet you do first, Candorus somehow survived being blown up by the Sith.
Kalo Nord, not Candorus.
Yes, you were correct. Kalo Nord. That bounty hunter we didn't care about. Somehow, which makes the Terrace destruction seem even less impressive, because this guy we literally saw crushed by a beam last time we saw him. It's just like, okay, the GM likes me. I'm here. Has been hired by the Sith to stop you.
He's the GM's personal Baron Von Badass.
Yeah.
Oh, I was trying to remember that guy's name. Baron Von Badass. That's it.
Thank you, Fear the Boot.
So anyway, he's like camping. He's like, I gotcha. And then you kill him and keep going.
And take his stuff.
And then, yeah, you like do some Wookiee hunting to get their trust. And then they're like, oh no, our leader's a bad dude. You also can't use Zalbar on the planet because they capture him.
Oh no, I can't use Zalbar. Whatever will I do?
But Kashyyyk has one really interesting thing, which is when you get to the map, it's got like an AI in it, and clearly they wanted to make Mass Effect because it's a Vigil.
It's a dick Vigil.
Yeah, except he knows the twist, and he doesn't understand that you don't, so there's a ton of really interesting foreshadowing in this conversation. I kind of wonder, since I knew the twist the first time I played this game, I kind of wonder how that goes to someone who doesn't.
What the are you talking about?
The AI.
No, that's what that's the feeling of when you're talking to it and you don't know the twist. The question is, what in the hell are you talking about? Because he's referencing you've done this before.
And one of my favorite things is like a mystery that you can't get it from the clues, but once you figure it out, the clues are so obvious. That's really cool to me, but I don't know that I like it here. Since I knew the twist, I really liked it, but objectively, I'm not sure it's good.
It played pretty well the first time, too.
It's confusing, but it actually plays really well because it falls into line with the rest of the stuff.
Honestly, it sets up a hook other than go get the MacGuffins. It's, oh,
what's
there's something interesting going on here.
Is that always Kashyyyk or is it the first one?
No, it's always Kashyyyk. Kashyyyk.
I think that's
kind
of poor because then you could go to Kashyyyk after.
But I would think that there would be these similar lines as you get on Korriban when you're talking to it. I've never
okay, maybe
done,
I did Korriban last.
I've never done Kashyyyk last. Because Jolie is awesome, but I would think that the lines become similar.
It's actually like the Mega Man X problem. Always start with Chill Penguin because you need that dash. Yeah. Always start with Kashyyyk because you need Jolie.
I can see the argument for starting with Tatooine. If you want to see HK be mean to Jolie when you go to Jolie. So anyway, Tatooine next because that's where HK is.
Again, Zerka's running around.
Yeah, and then they just, if you do it Kashyyyk Tatooine like I did, Zerka just vanish after that.
They do.
Which is weird. Berserker All, he's also the biggest asshole here. They want you to deal with Tusken Raiders. And like this guy's like, you should try to do it peacefully. And you can do that. And if you come back to them, they're like, hey, I think I have a peaceful solution. They're like, we didn't hire you to be a diplomat. We hired you for murder. Also, you have to do this or you're legally bound. I'm like, can you legally bind a Jedi? Also, I took Force Persuade, and even though Bastila will yell at me and it won't work, I could just be like, no, I don't need to.
You will work with them because I told you to.
Anyway, yeah, the main plot of Tatooine is that Tusken Raiders are attacking settlements.
Also known as the Random Encounters Planet.
Yeah, they attack you Final Fantasy style, just in random encounters as you walk through the desert.
Until you murder enough of them to get Tusken Raider clothing.
Yep.
Then you can put it
on
and
sneak in.
Man,
that's really Final
Assuming
Fantasy.
The game doesn't glitch, because actually the first time I did that, I'm like, okay, I need HK to translate, because he's a protocol droid. And I walked in, me and, I think I took Jolie, it might have been Karth, though. We're in Tusken Raider outfits, with HK-47 just being a droid, and the Tusken Raiders immediately shot me. I'm like, oh, this is problematic. And then I died like 20 minutes later, and autosaved so far back, I'm like, I'm giving up for a week. But then when I came back, I did it again. Like, hey, you're just Tusken, you're like Tusken Raider people. We'll talk with you. I did nothing different.
It also kind of depends on when you use the uniforms. Cause I think if you put them on outside or in that zone, they'll read you as not.
No, I didn't do that though. Like it was, you know how in front of their base, they'll attack you if you're not in uniform, but not if you are.
Mm-hmm.
I was in uniform there. They didn't attack me. When I opened the door, they're like, time for murder. It was just a glitch, and I know it's a glitch because I looked it up after to see what happened, and they're like, yeah, that's really glitchy. So yeah, anyway, HK-47 can translate for you. It's pretty interesting.
Because it's apparently the one language you don't speak.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Why don't you speak that language?
Because it's spoken one place on Tatooine among the Sand People who don't take outsiders in.
But the Force.
There's another.
You never had
you
any reason
either,
to talk to them.
That he comments on. This is weird. But anyway. They say, hey, the crate dragon has it. You have to bomb the crate dragon. The crate dragon is pretty dumb because you see him in his cave and there's this guy who's like, I set up mines. And you can be like, that doesn't sound cool. But unlike the Rancor, who you can bomb or just fight, if you walk up to the crate dragon, you literally just get a screen that says your party has been killed and get kicked to that opening screen, which is just really bad.
I've never actually done that. I didn't know that happened.
It's so bad. There's not even like a cutscene. You don't even see him attack you. You just all fall over dead in the cave. Hence, your party has been completely killed.
It's like the rabbit from Holy Grail.
It does kind of like imply that it's going to be a boss fight. Like the mines are supposed to weaken it and then you actually fight it. But the mines end up just outright killing it, making it kind of unsatisfying.
Then you go get the next star map. And then you go to Manon. Because
gargle fish people.
Manon is really boring and I don't know why.
It's because there's a lot less combat to break up the monotony of running around and talking to people to try and figure. There's a mystery going on in Manon that you have to figure out and try and put the pieces together and to let you go underwater to get to the next piece of the star map.
I think the problem again is that there's no one there for you to care about. And Manon should be the most interesting planet because its thing is not Bacta. Is only available there, and not back to super important. So they're neutral, and the Sith and the Republic are there. So you get to see some of the war tension, but no real fighting, and the Republic senator is an asshole to you, and makes you do a whole bunch of stuff for him, making you like the Republic less. And then you have to go down to a water station, which is kind of cool, but then you have to put on a diving suit and move super slow, and it's not very interesting.
They fit the when you have to do something like that in the next game, they actually make it much better, but in this one you move so slow, it just takes forever. It's interesting that they put it in, but God, does it take forever.
You also get arrested twice and have to defend yourself, and I kind of liked that, but I think most people probably find it annoying.
I actually really like that.
The trial is actually really fun.
One of my favorite things in video games is when you had to defend yourself in trial.
There's also a, like, court, like, side quest here, but it's not very well done. It's, like, Phoenix Wright super, super light. And I was really unsatisfied with the, like, dedicated side quest. But both the times I was arrested, I was pretty happy.
I liked that one, and I liked the one that was on Dantooine where you have to try and figure out who shot whom.
That was also
pretty
good.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. That one's okay.
Yeah, there are actually
a lot better, actually.
There are some decent side quests in this game, now that I'm thinking about it.
And some terrible ones. The Romeo and Juliet one.
Too many loading screens is what kills that one for me.
That too.
It would be fine if it was just your standard Romeo and Juliet, But there's like 2 hours worth of straight loading screens.
The woman with
the
sex droid.
Oh, I forgot about that one. There's probably a reason.
Oh, on the third planet, you have to fight Darth Brandon. I mean, Darth Bandon. Malak's apprentice, who we didn't see before. And in a cut to the villain's cutscene, we just sort of being like a rage problems teenager on Malak's ship.
Yeah, just kind of randomly.
Just walks up like, I'm your apprentice. And you go, what? Why haven't I seen you before then?
And then he comes and attacks you like, oh, you're that guy I saw on the ship. And I'm like, what? You are? Okay, Brandon, let's fight. Cool, dark Jedi robes. Bastila will wear these.
I'm not foreshadowing at all.
I'm not foreshadowing. These just are armor buff for you. And this red lightsaber crystal looks cool with them.
What color was your lightsaber anyway?
I had purple short and green long, blue long.
I also had purple short and blue long, so.
Purple is a good color. I usually try and get mine to be the same color.
Although I found out later that actually single wielding is mathematically the best in that game.
Really? Dual wielding is actually the best because there's a glitch for dual wielding work right.
I've been told that dual wielding...
not dual wielding, but the...
dueling doesn't work right?
The double-sided, I think, doesn't work right.
Double-bladed lightsabers?
Yeah. I've heard that you can make dueling work somehow with them, and if that's the case, that would be the best.
It might be dueling. I can't remember.
The skill dueling is like a +3 to hit and to AC. But if you're wielding a single-handed weapon and nothing else, I have heard a few places that it's glitched and will work with dual wielding. And if that's the case, that would be better.
The problem is dual wielding doesn't actually apply negative modifiers to your two hit. It says it does, but it doesn't actually take them into account when calculating.
Dueling in single-handed would still be better then. Because if you have flurry and burst of speed, that's 3 attacks still. Dual wielding would only get you up to 4.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's a +3 to your 2 hit, which actually ends up being more damage over those 3 hits. Anyway, I think it's over a trial of 10 hits you do more damage, and you're always going to do at least 10 hits in a fight. So anyway, after you leave the third planet, you get randomly captured by the admiral guy who's in charge of the Sith fleet. It's a little unsatisfying. Again, I think a slightly better cutscene would make it work better, but this isn't terrible. It's just, it would be cool if you had some sort of choice, even if it was a false choice that always got you caught.
Just like Telltale Games.
And then you get thrown into, you have to pick somebody to not get caught.
No, you have to pick somebody to, like, try to make a plan to rescue you. Like, if you pick Jolie, he gets caught and force tricks them into taking him to his own cell. And then force tricks them into coming in to give him a blanket because he's old and cold.
At any rate, you pick somebody to be in charge of your rescue operation.
But going back to what Tyler said real quick, the illusion of choice in these sorts of game is so much more important than actual choice. And I feel like that illusion in KOTOR breaks a lot. In part because your mom is always telling you not to be dark side. In part because a lot of the actual choices that have consequences don't come until near the end.
I think that's a bit, like, they save a lot of the interesting stuff in this game towards, or too late in the game, just generally. Imagine if you had taken HK off planet with you before it got blown up. I guess things wouldn't have changed that much, but at least you would have had an interesting character earlier.
So anyway, while you're being rescued, the Admiral is torturing Bastila because you love her. If you're a chick, does he torture Karth?
I cannot remember. I did not play a chick this time. The first game I ever played of this, I played a chick, but I can't remember.
And you're asking him questions, and he sort of realizes you don't know the twist and starts, like, cackling evilly. And then it kind of becomes clear Bastila knows what's going on. And Karth, who has trust issues, is super upset, and you're like, what the hell is going on? Also, Admiral Guy is Karth's arch enemy because he used to teach Karth, and then he blew up Karth's planet and wife.
Kind of put a damper on that relationship.
It is one hell of a way to issue your resignation.
So you escape with help of whoever you said, help me escape. You kill Admiral Karth's bad guy. This is an okay scene.
It is one of the most difficult fights in the game.
I don't think so, but
in
you
my
said
extent.
That.
Every time I've done it, it has been one of the most difficult fights I've had to fight.
And he's probably the best villain in the game, I think. He's like, Karth, come close to me. I have to whisper into your ear. And Karth does it, and he tells Karth the twist, and Karth freaks out, which, again, is just doing a really good job of building it, because now you just know something's up. Then Malak shows up on the ship, and he tells you, you are actually Darth Revan, bum bum bum. And you get a, I would say, an annoyingly long cutscene, but I say that because the game crashed for me after I beat Darth Malak and tried to get to the ship, and I had to do this all again, and you can't skip it, which I think is my only issue with it.
When you don't have that happen, It's actually really
also
nice.
I knew. I think it probably works really well if you don't know and
yeah,
you need time to process
they're
it.
They're cycling through it and they're running down all the like little hints and pointers they gave you towards this being the case. But now that you actually know what it is, that's actually toggling it and, you know, chose Revan, who's always had a mask on obscuring their face, pull their mask off, and it's your character's face, whichever one you selected at the character creation.
I think
which is pretty good.
I think it's probably not great, but I think you probably need a breather there, and they're giving it to you. It's probably like the ladder in Metal Gear Solid 3, and for those of you who don't know, after the penultimate boss, there's a 3-minute ladder climb with the theme song playing, and that works the first time because the theme song is amazing, and you're kind of thinking about the plot implications of what you just did on the climb, but on subsequent playthroughs, it is a 3-hour ladder climb. 3-hour, 3-minute.
No, 3 hours. That's how long it feels.
Now, that's Metal Gear Solid 5 and the 3-hour car ride with the boss expositing to you. And then he just stops so the theme song can play. And then he continues expositing to you.
That sounds like the ending of Bioshock Infinite.
Except for not interesting. Not interesting. It's that Keith Sutherland wasn't getting paid enough to actually voice Big Boss, just enough to put his credits there. So Big Boss isn't saying anything back, and it comes off pretty awkward. Anyway.
So immediately after you get away from that, Bastila having
sacrifices
been getting
herself.
Captured.
Again, I think a cutscene here would have made this a lot better. Because as it is, she goes into a door that was open and now you can't get in. And again, the illusion of choice is very important. If you had the choice, like, escape, try to rescue her, and try to rescue her was a cutscene where you went after and there was an explosion or something, and maybe you were knocked out and you'd wake up with Karth having dragged you back or something, that would be a lot more impactful, I think, then.
Oh, it just
this
happens.
Door closed. Guess it's time to leave.
Well,
especially since you were kicking Malik's ass. Or at least I was.
Yep.
Yeah, usually. I mean, this is kind of one of the earliest versions of a RPG you actually get choices in, so it makes a little bit of sense that they don't have a whole lot of that.
Which is why I'm reiterating, it's too bad we haven't played Planescape Torment and other BioWare games yet, because it might be that this is a huge improvement and I'm just being too harsh on it, judging it by modern standards instead of those, but I'm not sure. Anyway, you go to Fourth Planet, which in our run is Korriban. That's where the Sith hang out. You have to infiltrate the Sith Academy. You don't get a cool high school AU. I was really hoping you would. Karth is perfect for high school. Kandorus seems like he'd fit in.
If you talk to Karth enough, and on going back a step, if you talk to Mission enough to find out about her brother, you can find him in the Tusken Raider camp.
Oh, yeah.
If you talk to Karth enough and bring him with you on the adventure to Korriban, you will find his son in the Sith Academy. And they will have a father-son moment where his son bitches about him and he yells at his son and nothing actually gets done. But it is an interesting character moment.
I have that idea for a little bit because I love that in Dragon Age and Mass Effect 2. They really mastered this. I feel like it's not very well done here. Because I did the Mission's brother thing, but I used Karth all the time and tried to get all his conversations. And that didn't happen for me. And similar with Bastila, and I didn't get the love plot.
Did you find him?
Maybe I didn't.
Because he's not like, he doesn't come up to you and be like, Karth or Daddy. He's just another guy. He's always there, but he doesn't actually have any interactions with you unless you have Karth in your party and you find him.
Okay.
But he's like, in the barracks somewhere.
That seems kind of bad to me, though. I guess Griff is the same way, but Griff is in a place that it was obvious for me to explore,
I guess. He's actually not there if you don't talk to Mission enough to find out about that.
Well, that's fine. I just feel it's not very well done, because also there's the love subplot I kind of alluded to with Bastila, but I just didn't get those options for whatever reason, so at the end I'm telling Bastila I love her, but this is the first time either of us have even hinted at this.
I love you. What?
Yeah,
why?
Basically. And that's not a terrible romance, but it didn't play out well at all in my game. Whereas, if we compare this to Chrono Trigger for a moment, Chrono Trigger has some kind of similar things. In particular with Luca, where you can time travel and save her mother through a subplot that's very similar. And I think they're kind of going for something like that. Like I said, I think Chrono Trigger is a huge influence on BioWare.
You know, saving Luca's mother affects the plot remarkably little, because that's kind of the reason her dad became like an inventor guy.
Her dad was already an inventor.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's how she died in the first place. Ah, okay, never mind. Never mind.
And that just had more impact. And I think part of it is because they're animated, and so they can do more. Because this has okay voice acting on very boring models. But I feel like this is an idea BioWare would master a few games later, and it's just really stale here. Anyway, you go to Korriban, you join Jedi Camp. Jedi camp. You join Sith camp.
Do random side quests, eventually break out.
Kill your Sith master-to-be.
The very best.
You can kill them both.
Like no Sith ever was.
I didn't want to because I'm light side. But yes, I could have.
Actually, light side, you do kill them both.
No, I had Mercy.
Hmm.
She was like, please don't murder me. And I was like, Mercy. See, I knew you'd be a terrible Sith. Ha ha!
To kill Sith is my real test.
So then you know where the Starforge is. You go there, but immediately your ship stops working because they have an anti-ship field. Even though the Starforge makes ships, don't think about it too hard.
Well, it's making ships so hard, it's causing other ships to not work.
So you fall on the planet, which has like these Mon Calamari warrior people. They're like, hey, remember your promise to us? And you're like,
No.
No.
But I need to get into the temple. You're going to let me get in there,
oh, no,
right?
I was talking to the guys before that, who are like, hey, yeah, there are those asshole guys. You should fight them. And then if you're like, hey, I'm working for those guys, you instantly die again. And that's super lame, because it's just a dialogue choice, and it's the truth. So anyway, you get in. They're like, hey, yeah, you were a dick last time. And you're like, I'm not a dick now. They're like, well, do this for us, and maybe we'll believe you. So you do that. Then you go into the temple. If you're dark side guys are like, we have to come with you. If you're light side... Light side-ish guys are like, we have to come with you. Because both of them are kind of people who flirt with the dark side, so that's kind of weird. Then you go through this temple, and at the top is Bastila. And what
who
do you
died?
Think of Bastila's fall? Because we see in cutscenes like Malak torturing her and her being resolute, and they're clearly seeding it with how arrogant she is, but like all the villains, I don't get why she was like, yeah, the
she
Sith
She needed
aren't
to be
cool.
closer to the fall, I think, when you're actually dealing with her. She's arrogant and kind of an ass, but she's not to the extent
there needs to
where...
Be an, there needs to be an inciting incident. She needs to find out her masters were manipulating her, which would not be too much of a shock, because as we established, they're the worst. Like, there needs to be something. I don't buy
wasn't.
Her turn to evil the way I buy Magnus's turn to good.
Well, it's not even just that. It's why the Sith specifically.
Yeah. And, like, she's letting Malak be her boss, and she's, like, totally into Sith stuff now. She's like, yeah, well, I'll just kill Malak, and if not, I guess I wasn't good enough. It's weird. So you fight her, and this is where the interesting choices start. Because after you beat her, she's like, oh, mercy. And you can, like, be like, be good again. Or you can be like, hey, let's go murder Darth Malak. And that affects the plot. And Karth will be like, murder Darth Malak! And he can potentially get killed if you go dark side. So then the Rebel fleet gets there, but Bastila, for at least for me, because I went light side, was battle meditating them too. So the Sith were too powerful, so you have to sneak on the Starforge and fight Bastila and fight Malak in an epic duel that's really boring because the combat system isn't good.
Pretty much.
It's also a really long fight, even if you're...
Yeah, there's this... They do a decent job of establishing the Starforge as a dark artifact. I wish they had done more with it, like the Death Star shows up at the end of the first act. This doesn't show up until the end. We don't really know what it's doing until the end. I wish it was foreshadowed better, but it is cool. But then, when we skipped over this, when you were on the Leviathan, Admiral Guy's like, yeah, we totally attacked Dantooine, and that's taken care of. And Malak has all these ostensibly Jedi and stasis that he absorbs for health, but they're all the same boring model. It would have been cool if they had been like the Council people, who all have unique models that we know they've already made.
Well, we know that one of them is on board the... One of the Republic ships, so.
Yeah. So you kill Malak, who has five forms, but doesn't even get a cool winger theme song as he transforms. He just kills random Jedi.
And then either you take over or you get a Star Wars Episode 4-ish ending.
Yeah, again, going back to Mass Effect, it's like that, where you don't get to kill the Reaper, you just kind of watch him die. And then, you know, I was light side, so I got my medal. And everyone was like, yay, episode 4 was good.
Or something.
So that was like an hour of just talking about the plot of this game.
Yeah.
But that's what the game's strength is, I guess, even though I don't think it's great. I think they were really ambitious, and it's hard not to give them points for that.
Well, and the reveal at the end was pretty good. The foreshadowing was great, I think is really the...
The foreshadowing is great, and their attempts to feel like Star Wars were obviously successful, because forever people were saying this should have been the prequel movies.
And there's always actually, in my experience, there was, when I was playing it, even though the combat wasn't great, there was always that feel of there's something else going on here that I want to know, which kind of pulls you towards that ending point where you find out that you are Darth Revan.
And maybe if I'd been playing it when I was younger, I would have felt that more. That's why I played .hack, and I've played games for that reason, but not recently. Now I can finish a game if it gets boring, but I want to see the end of the plot. But this game doesn't get boring. It starts boring.
I think it gets less boring.
It gets more interesting because of the plot, though. The plot picks up. The gameplay, like, never unlocks. You get force powers, but they don't make the game that much more interesting. They're another option. They do make it a little better, but it's not like, oh man, this is a game now. So yeah, like, I can't recommend KOTOR, even though I think there's... I mean, I can recommend KOTOR if you're genuinely interested in writing a video game plot, but mostly as a way to see pitfalls. And there are things that work here, and you should look at them, especially, like we said, the foreshadowing and the twist. This is, like, M. Night Shyamalan at his on top of his game stuff. Or, you know,
yeah.
Fight Club stuff. I am comparing this to Fight Club. I don't think this is nearly as good as Fight Club, but the twist is executed just about as well. That said, I don't think it's an engaging game.
It's okay. It's worth a single playthrough, I think.
Although I really liked this game as a kid. I couldn't get off Terrace this time.
Yeah, so yeah, the problem is, as you said, the people who made this game really wanted to make Mass Effect, and now Mass Effect exists.
Yeah, honestly, just play the first Mass Effect. It's like this game, better combat. I actually like Mass Effect's combat. I'm the guy. Hi. But I think everyone would agree Mass Effect's combat is better than this. They've gotten much better at writing, much better at giving you choices, and much better at little characters. Rex is so much more interesting than all of the characters in this game, interesting parts put together. And Rex isn't that interesting of a character compared to others in Mass Effect. Caden sucks, but what are you going to do?
Poor Caden.
So yeah, my final thought on KOTOR is play Mass Effect.
It's not bad advice.
Pretend you have lightsabers.
Get that app that makes lightsaber noises, and every time you shoot someone in Mass Effect, assuming you snipe, you play the lightsaber effect.
I mean, you guys played Infiltrator, right?
No, I played Soldier, but I used a sniper rifle.
I was an Infiltrator.
Yes, I played Infiltrator with a sniper rifle, so...
I played an Infiltrator and a Vanguard.
Vanguard
Third
is fucking Mass
what
Effect
I'm going
too.
To do.
Right?
No, there's a Vanguard in Mass Effect 1.
Yeah, I know. I think it's more fun in Mass Effect 2.
It's more broken in Mass Effect 1 when you unlock the ability to just start with shotguns. So you're a full biotic with a shotgun.
Eh. All right, so we've talked way more than long enough on KOTOR.
Time to rank it?
Yeah.
We're going to do that really quick?
Yeah, let's rank KOTOR. I'm going to start it. The natural place would be comparing it to other Star Wars games, but it blows them out of the water. So I'm going to start it in a place that might seem a little weird, but hopefully you'll get what I'm
Fallout?
Going for. No, Pokemon Trading Card Game.
Huh.
Because they are both tabletop games being adapted to video games.
Okay, I see.
And both lack really interesting choice.
I think it's better than Pokemon TCG.
I think it's loads better than Pokemon TCG.
Much
so.
Better.
I wouldn't say loads, but they do, even though I don't think the system is good, they do a lot more trying to patch it up for a video game than Pokemon TCG.
I think
did.
The problem with the Pokemon
the
game
plot is much better.
The system in the Pokemon game was bad to begin with. At least D20 is a viable game system. Mm-hmm. So.
Alright, next RPG on this list is Final Fantasy, the original. I think Final Fantasy's combat is more interesting as its beginning choices, which are better explained, but it is also a game destroyed by load screens, and the plot isn't nearly as interesting.
I think it gets quickly outpaced.
What do you mean by that?
Final Fantasy may start stronger, but I think KOTOR picks up the pace a lot faster than Final Fantasy does, because Final Fantasy never gets much stronger than that.
That's true, that's fair.
I didn't play it, so...
Oh, yeah, that's true. How about Final Fantasy II? A somewhat... I don't know if I think it's better constructed, but it has an interesting plot. It kind of goes along more like a movie and less like a game. You have characters joining you and then leaving or dying and coming back later. I also think the combat system in Final Fantasy II is more interesting, but it's less interesting than Final Fantasy I, and not much more interesting.
Well, I mean, the combat system is basically identical,
but,
so...
Except the spells.
I would...
Oh, yeah, because you have MP instead of spell slots.
I would probably prefer to play KOTOR through, because Final Fantasy II, number one, starts with an hour-long cutscene of an engine, and the engine is not particularly interesting to watch sprites run around and wave sticks at each other.
I think I'd also have to give it to KOTOR over Final Fantasy II. I liked both of them and played both of them at about the same time, but... I think KOTOR wins in retrospect.
So you said Fallout. How do we think it compares to Fallout?
You
have a lot less actual choice in KOTOR, I think. The graphics in KOTOR are better, but I don't know if they're meaningfully better.
I like Fallout more. I like the universe of Fallout more. I like all the weird things.
I died on screen, too. I'd take KOTOR.
I think I agree with Tyler. I think Fallout just has more actual choice to it. Fallout is also really bad at explaining its system, but I feel like it's a little better.
I think the story
of KOTOR is definitely better than the story of Fallout, but I think I prefer Fallout as a game.
I feel like the story of Fallout is basic. Like, there's stuff, technically. My biggest thing is that there's so much quirky randomness in the sides of the world that you can go find, and there's none of that in KOTOR.
So RPG-ish game a little bit down is the first Ogre Battle, March of the Black Queen. I think KOTOR is better than that.
Yeah.
Do you have an argument against it? I think
I don't have
opaque systems, but KOTOR has a more interesting plot and speeds up quicker.
I was going to try to play Devil's Advocate, but I can't actually come up with a counterpoint, so.
Directly above Ogre Battle is Mega Man 3. Which is a super hard comparison, but there are only two games between Ogre Battle and Fallout, so here's where we lie. Mega Man 3 isn't great. KOTOR isn't great either, though. I think I've made it clear that's my feeling. I think I would take Mega Man 3 over it, but it's not a strong feeling.
I think I'd probably take KOTOR.
I would probably go with KOTOR as well.
Okay, above that is Mega Man for Game Boy, and if I don't think you can make an argument for Mega Man for Game Boy that you can't make for
Mega Man 3. Yeah, for similar reasons, I think I prefer KOTOR.
So what number does that actually slot in at?
27.
So KOTOR goes at number 27, directly below Fallout and above Mega Man for Game Boy.
After KOTOR, what are we going to follow that up with? And I believe it's going to be Jeremy's turn.
That's actually hard to follow up to.
Well, since it's Christmas, and we already played it through the magic time travel,
next week
we're going to play Metal Marines.
Metal Slug.
Next week we're going to play Metal Slug for the Neo Geo, because that doesn't get enough love.
What
is that like a new
Christmas?
Character for...
Nothing, but timing is weird.
Okay.
Is Smash got a new character just... Is it Metal Slug like Metal Mario?
Yes. Yes. Next time on Last Time, just like Metal Mario. This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2015. All the games, movies, and other media I mentioned in the show are copyright their respective owners, in case that wasn't obvious. Past episodes, articles, and other information can be found at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to contact us, send an email to ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to find us on Twitter, we are at ltovg. We can also be found on iTunes. If you wanted to help us out, we would really appreciate if you left us a 5-star review. No extra lies were lost in the recording of this podcast.
Dungeons and the Dragons.